D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. The Predators are back in action tonight, hosting the St. Louis Blues. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, right here on 102.5 The Game. But in the meantime, we welcome in our dear friend, Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL insider, who is presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Hi, Elliot. How are you?
Good. I want to shout out a listener, if that's okay.
Of course.
Bring it. Okay with you guys. I had a listener. His name is Jagar. He's on Instagram. And he just wanted to say, as a Preds fan, how much he appreciates this segment. So he's giving me a high standard. Now that I've shouted him out, I hope I don't ruin it. But I just want, he said he tunes in every week so he can hear Predators hockey talk. He likes the segment, so I wanted to shout him out.
Well, thank you for doing that. That's great. So, Elliot, on Saturday headlines on Hockey Night in Canada,
yeah. You
had a report about the New Jersey Devils being active in the league, and you said it is believed that Ryan O'Reilly and Steven Stamkos are on the Devils' radar. Now, we asked Barry Trotz about that report on Tuesday. He neither confirmed nor denied the Devils' interest, any conversations he may have had with Tom Fitzgerald. But how serious would you characterize the Devils' interest in Ryan O'Reilly and or Steven Stamkos?
Well, first of all, I would like to thank Barry for not burying me, so to speak. So I really do appreciate that. I think this. I think it's legit. I mean, I wouldn't have reported if I didn't think it was legit. Pierre LeBrun, I'll give him credit. He was the first to mention Stamkos. And I have heard Stamkos at times, but I will tell you I'm hearing more O'Reilly now than Stamkos. And, you know, we'll see. I think at different times the Predators have shown interest in both players. I know they've really liked O'Reilly for quite some time. And I think he's a guy that they're really interested in right now. Now, we'll see what happens. You know, as I mentioned, and you guys know, Steven Stamkos has say over this. Ryan O'Reilly has been assured that he has say over this. I think, like, in particular, I think the fit of O'Reilly in New Jersey would be perfect for what they need. Nico Hilscher is a bulked up guy, but he's still not the biggest guy. Jack Hughes, their number two center, obviously not the biggest guy. Down the middle, you need some bulk. And O'Reilly, who's also played wing at times, I think he's perfect for them, and I know they've liked them. So we'll see. Takes two to tango, Adam, but I definitely think there's something there.
Elliot, within that report on Hockey Night in Canada, you mentioned that the Devils are in a situation where they have to move money out in order to make anything work. And we were talking about this in the context of O'Reilly and Stamkos the other day. Which players are you hearing that the Devils might need to move in order to make these transactions work? We, for example, talked about Andre Palat. If the Devils wanted to make a deal with the Predators, Barry Trotz said he's open to taking on quote-unquote bad contracts in order to facilitate a trade, get a better return. We mentioned Palat. Who are some of the other players on the Devils roster who could be on the move to make these deals work?
Palat is the one I think a lot of people are talking about, but he has protection. And I think Dougie Hamilton is another one that people have been talking about in New Jersey, and he has some protection. So those are kinds of the names that people are looking at. And, we'll see. Palat has, I believe, more control than Hamilton does, so you have to maneuver around there. And the other thing, too, Adam, is that agents and players aren't dumb when they put together these lists. Like, I used to think when I was in my younger, moderately less intelligent days that you just did this thing kind of, I don't want to go here, I don't want to go there. I think now there's a lot of strategic play in it. And they kind of go through and they say, okay, I think Hamilton is half the league. They say, okay, now where would you absolutely not want to go? Okay, this, and this. Now, would you prefer to stay in New Jersey? Yes. Okay. Well, here's some teams we think that if New Jersey had to move you, they would try to go to. And so maybe there would be some teams there that you wouldn't necessarily put at the top of your list, but would be in positions where they might be places that New Jersey could try to move them if they had to, and you kind of block those two. So Like, these things can be very challenging. Like, agents and players are very strategic in how they handle them.
Elliot, one thing we did talk about with Barry Trotz, this is more of a general manager question, but now that the NHL has abolished these double salary retention trades, how, based on the GMs you speak to, and I know you speak to most, if not all of them, how difficult does that make their jobs? Because Steven Stamkos, for example, would be a prime candidate for a double salary retention trade if that could still happen, but it can't. So how does that make transactions more difficult around the league in your reporting?
Well, the one thing we should mention, Adam, is that it can still happen.
Okay.
So the way it works, and I understand how maybe you got caught up here, but what basically has occurred is it's 75 days. Mm-hmm. Now, thanks to a podcast listener who asked the question, I checked with the league, and the clock does not stop during the Olympics. So basically, if the NHL trade freeze goes into effect for Christmas on December the 20th. So if you trade a player between now and December the 20th, before that freeze, you still could do it. You still could have 75 days before the deadline to have a double retention. But after the trade freeze, because it goes in for a week from the 20th to 27th, if any player traded then, they will not be eligible for double retention. And it will, like, I think, Adam, that right now it's still hard because there's a lot of tightness. But I think as the cap goes up, and, you know, we know the cap's going to 104 at least next year and 113 the year after, I think you could see a situation where this is less of a problem, but right now it's tight. Now, one of the things I wanted to mention about the Predators, Adam, is that you only get three retention slots.
Yes.
You know, you're only in a situation where you can get three of them. That's a bit of trouble for Nashville sometimes. And also, they've eaten a lot of buyout money because of Turris and Duchesne. So I've heard they're not overly eager to eat money.
Thank you for clarifying the double retention there. I do have one more question before I hand it off.
It's confusing. Believe me, it's confusing.
Before I hand it off, look, you've been a reporter in the NHL and the NBA for a very long time. You've been a part of some ludicrous news cycles. I have to ask, where does Fitzygate going on in Vancouver with Quinn Hughes rank among the most ludicrous news cycles you've had to cover in your time as a reporter?
You know, you saw Spaceballs, ludicrous speed. Like, that's what it is. Like, we were joking. We taped, like, so our pod comes out tomorrow, and, you know, we tape the thought line in advance, and we do the news later on tonight. And somebody, a fan, asked about, like, technically over the Christmas dinner, could the Hughes brothers tamper with Quinn? Like, is there a rule against that? And we were joking, like, at the table, the Luke and Jack are allowed to call him Fitzy while Quinn has to stick to Tom. And if that's the case, they should be okay.
For people who missed it, Quinn Hughes, of course, in the news, could be traded by the Vancouver Canucks. Tom Fitzgerald, the GM in New Jersey. Quinn Hughes was asked about Elliott's report over the weekend and referred to Tom Fitzgerald as Fitzy, despite the fact that he is not the GM of the team he plays for. And that just sent Vancouver fans ballistic. How dare he refer to him as Fitzy? But anyway, Willie, take it from here.
I know. It's crazy, man. The world is a crazy place, guys. It is just a crazy place. Crazy place.
Elliott, one of the things I think about when you guys start talking about what some of the contenders need and things like that, teams that have been in the mix for several years, like the Oilers, would be the top-of-mind team that I think about when I ask this, where they've been going to the well. They've been trading a lot of assets to try to load up.
Yep.
And I always ask myself, if you're a seller and the Oilers call you and they say, well, you know, we got some money problems and you need to take a bad contract and we want this guy or this guy, what do they actually have to trade that is of value to a seller?
You know, they still have, the guy they traded to Tampa was a really talented young player, Sam O'Reilly, in that Isaac Howard deal. So, I mean, if they wanted to, and I'm not sure they do, I do think they want to get younger. They have a first-round pick in 2027 that they could move, Willie. They've got Isaac Howard, a young player like that, and if they wanted to, they could move. I'm not saying they would, but if they wanted to, they could do that. So they have a couple. And, you know, I do think along those lines, they tend to be very careful about those things. And that's why I think the Oilers aren't just out there, like, jumping at the first thing. I think it's they know they have limited assets, Willie. So they want to make sure if they do it, they do it right.
But I think a Predator fan who hears that, right, might be a little bit underwhelmed. He's like, I'm supposed to trade you a Ryan O'Reilly, and the first round pick might be a lower pick if Edmonton catches fire.
Oh, wait,
like,
are you sorry? Yeah. You talking about that? So did you say? Excuse me. Did you say Devils or did you say Oilers?
I was saying Oilers, but it could apply to any team that really has gone, you know, down this process several years. They've been buyers for a long time, and so there's not a whole lot in the well in terms of draft picks and prospects that people really like.
Well, I think the thing that the Predators have that's going for them is that they don't have to do this with Ryan O'Reilly. Like, they don't have to. You know, like, that's the one thing. Like, people are like, oh, they should. You don't have to do this now. Now, I think the thing that really helps Nashville in this situation is that teams like O'Reilly. If he wants to go there, there's going to be teams that are interested because he's still playing well and he's so incredibly respected for the effort that he puts in, right?
Oh, he's playing great right now.
So, like, I think Nashville's in a really good position. They don't have to do it, so they can say, guys, like, if you want us to do this, you have to make us do this. And that's a good spot to be in. I mean, I think a lot of us talk about O'Reilly because we know there's interest and we know teams want him. And I think with Trotz saying that we're kind of like a rebuild now, or showing by his actions they're in kind of a rebuild now, you think you can get pieces for them. But the bottom line is they don't have to do it if they don't want to do it.
One thing that I'm intrigued with, we here have not really gotten into who's going to be on the USA Olympic team, even though everybody really got into the Four Nations last year. When it comes around, there'll be a huge amount of interest.
Yeah.
But I notice up in where you are, every single spot on the team is debated, it seems like, every day, right?
Yeah.
I was watching Connor Bedard last night. He had another good game, and I know that's a guy that you're talking about. And sometimes I think this, with a lot of fans, they view it as who are the 12 most talented, maybe goal scorers, right? Like, who are the skillsiest people that you could put on there? But it's got to be the pieces together. I'm fascinated how that process works up there.
Well, you know, I think that, remember when the Dream Team first started in basketball, they just took, like, the 12 best players, right? And, like, that Dream Team, I mean, my God, like, nobody was touching them. But as the rest of the world started to catch up, at least at the elite level, at the top of the top, like, these other countries, they could at least make a national team that could challenge the U.S. The U.S. realized that you had to have people there that were willing to accept certain roles, right? Like, you needed guys who could do, like, guys who weren't afraid to sit on the bench because someone's not going to play, and guys like, you know, Draymond Green or Tyson Chandler that were more defenders or rebounders than they were scorers. So, like, everybody adapts. I think the one thing that this tournament showed last year, and, you know, with the fact that the Olympics rink is going to be slightly smaller than the NHL rink, like, at the Four Nations last year, Willie, everybody checked. Like, the best players, they checked. Everybody played defense. Everybody. Everybody was a two-way demon. If you were only an offensive player there, they couldn't put you on the ice. And I think that that's what we've kind of learned, is that if you can't play two ways, you're not going to play. And that's the biggest challenge with Bedard. It's not that he's a bad player or anything like that. He isn't. But he hasn't yet shown, at least in the eyes of a lot of people yet, that he can play, defend at that level. And you know what? To be honest, I still might put him on the team. Like, he's that good. But that's the question everybody has, Willie.
we were curious with this. A lot of the fans, because of where the Predators are, and they're playing pretty well right now. They're really not that far out, even though there's a huge mass of teams in this pack. So it's still seller mode until otherwise noted. But we try to point out how far we are from the actual trade deadline, even though last year it seemed like some teams benefited. One guy I can think of is Mikael Granlund. Who was it that when Dallas went out and got him before the Four Nations? They got him in there, played a couple games, he could get situated, and then he could take that break to get even more acclimated to Dallas and then played really well for them. Do you think that might apply again, that even though the trade deadline is not until March, that you might have some activity leading up to it with that theory?
Yeah, I think I definitely think that there are teams who believe that, 100%. It's just that, as you talked about, there's very few teams that are out, Willie, and teams don't sell when they're not out. Like that Eastern Conference, I've never seen anything like it before with all those teams still in there. It's crazy. And as a result, nobody's waving the white flag. And that's part of the problem. Now, I like I said, the Christmas trade freeze is scheduled for 9 days from now. And I've had a couple of people say, don't be surprised if something happens before then. But, you know, I don't know what that could be. I just think, Willie, that the more teams there are in it, the harder it is to make trades.
Elliot, if you don't mind, we do have a listener question for you on our text line.
I don't mind at all.
This is a Nashville thought line.
Yes, a Nashville thought line. Matthew wants to know, because we were talking about O'Reilly and Stamkos. Matthew wants to know what you've heard about Jonathan Marchessault in potential trade discussions.
You know what? I think Marchessault is a guy who's kind of like the other two. Like, he has full say, and last year, Marchessault was adamant that he was not going to give up so soon. And I haven't heard him as much, but I still think his name has kind of been out there in the sense of, I think what Nashville has to do with a guy like Marchessault and a guy like Stamkos, they've got to kind of know, even O'Reilly, they'd have to know if they wanted, first of all, would they be willing to go? And if they wanted to go, where? And then can only Nashville, or the other thing that could happen is somebody could call and say, I really like Jonathan Marchessault, and they'll Trotz will say, look, I don't know if he's going to go to you, so you got to give me a reason. And if he gets an offer that he likes, he'll go to Marchessault or Marchessault's representative and ask. But unless it's changed, and I admit I haven't spoken to Marchessault this year, unless it's changed, Marchessault was adamant that he didn't want to give up so quickly, and he wanted to be part of the solution.
Elliot, before we let you go, we did talk about the Olympics, and the St. Louis Blues are here. I assume that Jordan Binnington still has the inside track to be Team Canada's goalie, although he has had a rough season. So is there any chance someone like a Logan Thompson, hell, even a Scott Wedgwood, can work their way in there and make it an interesting decision for Team Canada?
Well, I think this. Based on what he did last year in the final game, Adam, if Jordan Binnington had a save percentage of 200, I would still put him on the team. Mm-hmm. Like, I would. And I think he starts Canada's first game. I mean, who knows what happens between now and February. But if you're asking me right now, he's on the team, and he's Canada's starter. He gets the chance to prove. Like, you have a longer runway at the Olympics than he did at the Four Nations. He gets the first chance to show he should be the guy. I think Logan Thompson will be on Team Canada. I think Scott Wedgwood is probably fourth. I think Darcy Kemper is the other guy I'm looking at right now for Team Canada. But I think Binnington is there. And I'll say this. I think in the eyes of most Canadians, hockey fans, he's not very good right now, but there were people who questioned him last year, and he played one of the best games of goaltending a lot of us have ever seen. So nobody's questioning Binnington at the highest level. By the way, I also wanted to mention, at the Board of Governors, I briefly had a chance to meet Bill Haslam. We just said hello to each other. He was there with Michelle Kennedy from the Predators, and I got a chance to meet him briefly. I wanted to interview him, but he was very politely said, not yet. I'm still working on what I'm working on. But just had a pleasant chance to say hello and shake hands.
All right, now, Elliot, you got it next. Sometime when you see Michelle, you've got to ask her to turn the clock back to the early 90s when she and I were both basketball players at Vanderbilt. Our numbers are not in the rafters for our great play, but we had a fun time. She and her team, they were a good team, but we knew each other a long time ago. So ask her about her basketball career sometime.
She said your nickname was Brick. Is that correct?
That's cruel. I got to talk to her when she gets back.
Brick Donick does have a nice ring to it.
I made that up. Don't blame her. I completely made that up. Yeah.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL insider, has been our guest on the Maze, Ving, and Adonic. He joins us every Thursday during hockey season, and he is presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, great stuff as always. Thank you so much for your time. We'll catch up next week.
All right. Take care.
615-737-1025, Brick Donick. It does roll off the tongue. What was your field goal percentage? Your career field goal percentage, Willie?
Off the top of my head, I don't know.
We'll have to look it up.
Not awful. Not awful.
Okay.
I think a low number of attempts. Low number of attempts.
That is true.
Good free throw percentage. Okay. Like 80% free throws.
And that's important.
Yeah.
It's important to hit your free throw.
Not a lot of shots, though.
Okay.
Fair enough. Nobody would foul me.
Because you were so good at the free throw line. 615-737-1025. We will react to what Elliot had to say. We'll take your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. Our show is presented by Bax Homeworks, which transforms kitchens, bathrooms, and living spaces into places you can't wait to come home to. Get a free estimate now at BAXHomeworks.com.